Today's scripture reading is found in the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 15, and is on pages 908 and 909 in the Pew Bible. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost." Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or, what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost." Just so, I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And he said, "There was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that belongs to me.' And he divided his living between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took his journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in loose living. And when he had spent everything, a great famine arose in the country, and he began to be in want. So he went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have fed on the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough to spare, but I perish here in hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was yet at distance, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and make merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to make merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what this meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has received him safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Lo, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your living with harlots, you killed for him the fatted calf.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to make merry and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.'"
Have you ever been lost? I'm talking about one of those situations when you were out in the woods hiking and you lost your bearings and you could not for a split second pinpoint where you were. Or you went and visited a city, you were a tourist trying to see the sights, you turned down the wrong street, you were stubborn, you kept on the way, and then suddenly you realized, okay, well maybe I don't know where I am. We as individuals can be in situations throughout life when we don't know where we are and what is going on. I'm sure if we had a chance to sit around, we could swap some fun stories on this topic. I think married couples in particular like to poke fun at each other in this territory. I want to tell you about a situation a few years ago now when Ian was 4 and Savannah was 6. We were newly in the community of Lakeview, which is on the other side of the state, not too far from Myrtle Beach. We had gone into Dillon to eat supper. It was getting dark by the time supper was over and we were getting in the car to head home, and I said, well, I know the roads around here now. I'm going to experiment and take a new way home. Stephanie was a little skeptical over there, but she went along with it. I started down this path. We turned off the highway down onto one of the back roads, and I began to underestimate what was going on as the sun was going down. Things were getting dark. And then I started to turn on roads where the corn was 7 to 8 feet high, and you could see nothing but corn around you. And so as I'm taking these turns, I hear the voices in the back seat. I hear Savannah asking her mother, are we lost? And Stephanie's there saying, well, I don't think we are. And I'm saying, okay, Savannah, it's okay, it's okay. We'll make it home, don't worry, don't worry. And then Ian, in perfect timing, chimes in. This is the perfect time to be hysterical. Some of you may not know, he's 4 at this time. He had been watching Toy Story, and there's a line in Toy Story that he repeated at the right moment. And so this is a lovely story that has become part of our family history that we love to tell. But have you ever been in that situation where you've lost your bearings and you're not quite sure where you are or what you can do next? As I've said, we can stubbornly trudge onward and try to stumble our way back into a position of familiar settings and territory and gradually make our way back. Or we can seek help, or we just sit down and cry for a moment. There are different metaphors for points in our life. We talk about our life as a whole. What purpose, what direction do our lives have? And have we ever gotten to a point in our lives when we started to doubt the choices that we've made? Did I make the right choice in a spouse? Did I make the right choice in a job? Did I make a right choice in the school that I've attended? And in all these situations, we might feel like that person in the middle of the woods, not quite sure where to go. Jesus himself, of course, in this famous passage, brings to mind this metaphor for the spiritual life, for our relationship with God. And as I've said, this is a passage that we have heard many times, read. You've probably heard sermons on this many times, focusing on the coin or the sheep or the prodigal son. This morning, I want us to look back at that last parable. And for me, I think referring to it as the prodigal son omits several things. Sometimes you might hear someone refer to this as the parable of the loving father, but I think it also should be called the parable of the prodigal sons, plural. Because in the first parable, we have a coin that's missing. Excuse me, the first parable is the sheep that's missing. The second parable is the coin that's missing. And in this one, we don't have just one son, we have two sons. And that's not an extraneous detail there. We remember that Jesus starts these parables in response to what's going on around him. And did you catch those details at the beginning of the chapter? That sinners and tax collectors are gathering around Jesus to listen to him. And then you have the Pharisees and the Jewish religious leaders standing to the side. You can picture them with their arms crossed, scowls on their faces, thinking once again, well, why is Jesus hanging out with these characters? And that is the context in which Jesus tells this story. The familiar story. We begin with a limited family. A father and two sons. There are no details about the missing wife, mother. So we don't have any details there. We're just told about this relationship between a father and his sons, and the story moves quickly along. This is before any psychological studies about birth order, and yet Jesus here seems to get things pretty on the head, at least from the experience many of us have had, that the younger child is the one who here is testing the boundaries. And the younger child comes to the father and says, in a very insulting kind of way, Dad, I want my inheritance now. In other words, he's saying, Dad, I can't wait. And perhaps even so far as to say, Dad, I wish you were dead so I could get this money now. You think about the great insult in that. And this opportunity for family strife. If the elder brother is there witnessing this, you can think about all the kinds of things that are already going through his head. And then the pained expression on the father's face. But instead of saying, no, you're going to have to wait, the father gives him the inheritance early. And this is one of those situations like a lottery winner who's undisciplined in how to hold on to money. You suddenly come into the money and then you go out and you decide to spend it. And we talk about spend in all capital letters. You are out there living it up. And there are a number of examples of lottery winners who immediately go bankrupt. Because spend, spend, spend is all they can think about, and they overtax themselves, go beyond what their resources were. And this is what's happening here with this younger son. We like to create all sorts of scenarios about what he does. And in fact, the elder son offers his own take on it later in the parable. But all the parable says is that he spends it on wasteful living. Living it up. We think about all sorts of different ways. And artists over the years who portrayed this in paintings have given us images about the ways that he could spend it. But that's not the point of the parable. The point of the parable is he goes through it quickly. And it says there, and have you ever caught this detail? It's not just that he was wasteful. It is then that a famine, and it says a severe famine comes on the land. So that now everybody is facing this trouble, not just him. But because he wasted all his resources, now that this time of trial has come on the scene, he is not prepared for it. So the very first time in his life, presumably, he is now in a situation where he needs to find money. And he hires himself out. You're talking about the self-pity and the introspection and the guilt and all this showering down on him as he comes to this person to ask, well, can I work for you? Perhaps you've seen the show Dirty Jobs. It is a profile of different jobs that we typically have distanced ourselves from that we don't know anything about. We, of course, think about sanitation crews and those who take care of our garbage facilities, landfills. But think about those who work in factories that slaughter animals, or those who are out on boats that bring in fish and that strong odor they've got to work around all the time. This show profiled those kinds of jobs. And if that show had been around at this time, they would have profiled this job. This was the dirty job of this era. That he's out there working with the pigs. And if you know, in a Jewish context, pigs are unclean. This is dirty. If he's hanging out with them, then that label of unclean comes onto him. But in another point of absolute lowness, he's hit the bottom. He starts envying the food that the pigs are eating because his stomach is growling. He's bent over in pain. He wants what the pigs are eating, but the parable tells us no one gave him anything. You talk about this. At the end of your ropes. I wonder if any of us have experienced this. To be at that point. And at that point, Jesus tells us he came to his senses. That's a lovely phrase here in English as a translation. He came to his senses. Do you know what that's like? Have you ever come to a light bulb moment in your life when suddenly you realize how stupid you've been? How wasteful you've been. And you think, well, if I could only go back and undo this, this, and this. He, of course, cannot. And so what does he then start thinking? Well, even the people who had the lowest positions in my father's household, the hired men who worked for him, they had plenty to eat. And once that falls into place, he starts thinking, well, maybe my father will hire me. But then he remembers the pained look on his father's face and the scowl from his brother. And then he starts thinking, well, how can I go back home? You ever been in that kind of situation where you've been part of a wrong, where you've hurt someone else, and you wish that you could erase it? But you then think, well, how can I go back? How can there be reconciliation? And Jesus tells us in the parable, he starts playing scenarios in his mind. What is he going to say to his dad? He's going to say, I've sinned against you. Please just take me back. Let me be a worker in your field. Okay. So that's the way the parable opens. And we see there are two major shifts in this parable. It moves first from the younger son to the loving father. And later we'll see another shift. But this shift moves from that son at its lowest point, looking forward to how he can resolve this situation to his father, now to the dad. The camera goes back to the homestead, looks at the father, and we are asking the question, what has he been doing all this time? And here we can speculate, because the parable just moves us quickly along. We think about the father, all sorts of ways he could have responded. He could have shut the door and said, he's dead. He's no longer my son, no longer part of the family. I will forever now close that part of my life off. You ever found that situation in your family or in a friend's family? These are tragic scenarios, closing the door off. But that's not what's going on here. Instead, we have a father who weeps, who mourns this hole in his family. As he sits down at the dinner table, he notices that empty chair every time. And then every evening, after supper, going out on the porch, looking at the horizon, waiting for his son, hoping that he'll see his son coming back. the parable quickly moves us to the point where that happens. The father's out there, sees a familiar shape on the horizon. Is that my son? He walks like him. He's about the right height. As he gets closer, that's his hair color. Yes, that's my son. And then he immediately runs out, throws his arms around him, pulls him in, kisses him, and claims him as his son once again. But the younger boy pulls away. He says, "Father, no, you can't do this. I'm not worthy of this. I've sinned against heaven and against you. Show me judgment, but show me mercy too. Let me just be a worker in your field." And the father says, no, you're my son. He calls to the servants, a new robe, a new ring, new sandals. And he says, "Go get the fatted calf and slaughter it, because we are having a celebration." So that's the first part, the second part. Now we have the second shift to the last part of the parable. And this is to the eldest son. That boy who watched his brother do the unthinkable, who left the family with his resources early, who heard rumors about what his brother was doing while he was at home watching his dad's grief. This boy has been out working in the fields all day. And if you've ever worked on a farm, you know it is hard work. So he's coming home exhausted. His normal routine. And as he approaches, he starts to wonder, something's off. Nobody's out here around the house working. And the lights are on in the house. And is that music I hear? Is that celebration? What's going on? So he quickly finds the nearest servant, pulls him aside and asks him. We know the answer. We know it's about celebration. But what does that eldest boy do? He says, "I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to celebrate." He's not worthy of this attention. What is going on? Is the world upside down? And at that point, it's very interesting because we can quickly identify the first son is lost when he's left home and squanders everything. But here now, there's a celebration going on inside. Everybody is there. But the eldest son refuses to participate. And in that refusal, he is breaking fellowship, which requires the father to come out to him. And you think about that. There's a little bit of insult in that, because the father has officially called for this celebration and the eldest son refuses to be a part of it. We know that there then is this conversation between the two of them. And if you've ever been a parent or a school teacher handing out candy to children, you know inevitably there is going to be the, "Well, he got 6 jelly beans and I only got 5, or he got 6 red ones and all of mine are black." The eldest son here says, "Dad, where's my party? I've been here working hard. You can see the sweat on my brow. You know every day I'm out there in the field working for you, and you didn't even give me a goat to celebrate with my friends." That indictment, that heaviness. What's the father's response? "Son, everything I have is already yours. You're already celebrating. You're already a part of the family." And yet, as we hear this parable, don't we identify with the elder brother? Don't we say, yeah, there should be some accountability here? But if we want to identify with the prodigal, we quickly are on the side of grace. But what's interesting here is that the Father loves both His sons. And He has come out here to talk to His eldest son, even in His eldest son's indictment of Him and the way the Father's being generous. And now, what's interesting here is that the parable stops after the Father reiterates, we should celebrate because your brother, it's interesting there, the pronouns, the elder brother says, your son went and wasted everything, and now the Father says, your brother is here, and now we should celebrate. The parable ends, we think once again, to Jesus' audience. Who is listening? Those Pharisees standing over there with their arms crossed and scowls on their faces and the judging images running through their minds. Who are the sinners in this audience? So, that is a familiar passage to us. And we ask ourselves today, how do we respond to this? We can place ourselves in different places within the parable, at different points within our lives, whether we are the one who goes out and wastes things, whether we are put in the position of carrying out Jesus' love and receiving those who have been ones who have rejected us in the past, or have we been in seats of judgment? Asking ourselves, how can we associate with these individuals? And as we consider these things, we realize that there can be more than one way to be lost. Our usual image of being lost is one who does have an extravagant kind of life. One who lives in an act of rebellion, who is actually declared that this life is everything. That we want our inheritance now, and we're going to live it up in this life. And just like the younger son, thumb our nose at God, turn away, and go our own ways. Until a severe famine comes in the land, until heavy situations descend on us, situations that leave us out of control, situations that leave us out in the field, hungry, wishing to eat the food that pigs have, wondering what has become of our lives, where are we going, do we have any future? But at those moments, Christ can come. And we see many people with these radical conversion stories, just like the Apostle Paul, going in one direction and then, bam, a crisis scenario, a point of lowness, a point where that person comes to his or her senses, turns his or her life over to Christ, and it is a beautiful story. And these testimonies are ones that we like to hear. These are testimonies that draw numbers of people around to hear and to listen. But this parable also focuses on that second son. That second son who was still at home, who felt like he was doing what he should have been done from the very beginning. That son who did the work, that son who was out there in the field sweating. But at the end of the day, when it was time to celebrate, that son had his listing of wrongs. The people who had disappointed him. The people that he looked down upon. Those who wasted their resources. Those who were sinners. I can't associate with them. And yet Jesus at this point says, that son is equally lost that son is equally in need of God's attention. When we place ourselves in the seat of judgment, have wandered from God's plan. We are out of the household. We stubbornly refuse to participate in the glories of God's kingdom. And at this point, it's helpful for us to remember that Christ loves the judgmental too. That Christ goes to us and calls us to share in the love and the mercy of God's kingdom. And so this familiar parable still speaks to us today. It tells us there are many ways, and at least two dominant ways, that we can be lost. But there is only one way to be found, and that is in the loving arms of our Heavenly Father, who takes us in and transforms our lives to the service of others. This morning, we come now to our time of invitation and commitment. It is a time for you. If you have never made a commitment for Christ, it's time for you to walk forward, for this church to encourage you and to pray for you. If your life resembles that of the prodigal son, that it has no direction or purpose, now is the time for you to walk forward so that Christ can receive you and the loving Heavenly Father can wrap His arms around you and bring you home. But this is also a time for us who have been a part of the community to ask ourselves, have we ever been like the elder brother? And are there times when we may be pointing our fingers at others and calling attention to the failures of others when we are lost ourselves? It is a time of invitation and commitment as we stand together and sing hymn number 343, Amazing Grace.